The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
When we do have secret prisons, that is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. When you watch the news on television, obviously there's a lot of focus on what's going on in the United States and often around the world. We talk about Europe all the time, what's happening in Russia. We talk about countries that threaten the United States, countries like North Korea and Iran. We talk about countries where we have American troops, places like Iraq and Afghanistan. We might see movies from India. Probably the country, the continent, the area of the world that we talk least about is Africa. Maybe because Africa is seen as this place where there's all kinds of problems. Maybe because America really hasn't intervened much in Africa. A lot of realists in the foreign policy school might say, well, if they don't have oil, we're not interested. What is going on in Africa? What has gone on throughout its history? What's going on today? And why should Americans care? The focus has largely been about problems. We've heard about the genocide in Darfur. We've heard about the AIDS breakout in the South Africa and southern areas of Africa. Of course, our president himself has a father that comes from Africa. But it's still not something very much on the American mind. Today, I want to explore Africa, its problems, and the good things that are going on there as well with my guest. His name is Mohamed Moussa. He is from Sierra Leone himself, and in fact, he's someone who recently has been working here on the Inside Scoop. Mohamed, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, sir.
Mohamed, first I want to start with where you're from, and we have a map of Africa right here. It's, of course, a very large continent. I don't think Americans often realize the size of Africa. This map shows various countries located. If we could show it on the screen, please. It shows the different countries in the world located in Africa. Can we please show that up on the screen? There it is. This is the continent of Africa right here. And you can see the entire United States fits just the continental United States in the northern part. This map has Argentina, Western Europe, India, and China all fitting in what is, after all, a vast continent. This is the full continent of Africa. This is probably a better map right here with all the colors. Now, you are from a country called Sierra Leone.
Yeah, Sierra Leone is a small country that is located on the western coast of Africa, and it is by the Atlantic Ocean, as you can see. It's neighboring countries like Liberia and the Guinea-Conakry. And Sierra Leone has an indigenous of 6.148 million people living inhabitant in Sierra Leone. And Sierra Leone also has like 18 different dialects that we speak in Sierra Leone. So it's a country that covers like 29,000 square mile footage that is just slightly smaller than South Carolina.
South Carolina, so, even bigger.
Yeah.
So about the state size of South Carolina.
Carolina, yes, sir.
Now, it's interesting. Sierra Leone, of course, was a British possession. Most of Africa was colonialized, with the exception of Egypt, pretty much, and even Egypt, to a large extent, was under British control. But pretty much all of Africa was English or French. The English controlled these areas. The French controlled these areas. There was the Belgian Congo. The Germans were in Angola and Mozambique. But pretty much at the end of the 19th century, around 1900, Europeans came in and colonized.
No, it's not exactly in the 1900. The continent of Africa was really colonized in the 1600. Like Sierra Leone have the first contact with the Western European that came there and the Americans that came there was the 1656.
Well, they weren't Americans then. They'd be British.
Yes, they came there. Yes, they were British. They came there and then took our first slaves from that part of the world and brought them to this part of the world. And I will say the early contact with our African coast was the 16th century. And if you check also, America has the only one country that America colonized there in Africa is Liberia.
That's true.
So I can give you a correction on that.
Well, no. That's true. Yeah. In fact, Liberia was colonized, I believe, in the 1830s by former African slaves who returned to Africa. And Liberia famously has the flag, which is the same as the United States flag, except there's one big star in the field of blue.
That is correct. And then if you check, the Liberians just speak, their language is just like broken English as the Americans speak. They have that American dialect when they speak. So yes, Liberia is only continent, is only country in Africa, in the entire continent, that the Americans did colonize.
Right, there was an American colony. The rest were, it was mostly England and France. As I said, Belgium had the middle part here, Zaire, and a few Germans, Angola, and Mozambique. Yeah. Well, Mozambique were the Portuguese. So there are lots of European influence throughout. You mentioned there were 18 dialects in Sierra Leone.
Yes.
Do they relate to different peoples, different tribes? Just different areas of the country?
Well, there are three main languages that are spoken there in Sierra Leone. We have the Timini, which takes like 30% of the population, and the Mendes also, they have like 30% of the population, and then the rest is different dialect that are distributed amongst those 18 other dialects that you have. So that is what is made up of the Sierra Leone indigenous people.
So would you call those tribes, Timini and Mendes?
Yes, they are tribes. The Timinis are mainly located in the northern part of Sierra Leone, and the Mendes are located in the eastern part of Sierra Leone.
Now, one of the things you mentioned, of course, there was contact way back to the 1600s.
Yes.
But the Europeans didn't occupy much of Africa until the 1800s.
Around the 1700s, really, they came there. And around the 1800s, they did come there.
That's
and
when they
occupied
the line.
Yes, and then trying to distribute the African continent and then give boundaries to the African continent. Yes, that one was done around the 1800s. But by the 1700s, they started, you know, there was a movement here to free the slaves. So the first slaves were freed and brought to the Sierra Leone, and the capital city was named as Freetown because that is where all the free slaves were brought into Africa, and then from there they were distributed across the continent.
Now, are these freed African-American slaves or slaves from other countries like England or other? I know the Americans went to Liberia. I wasn't aware that they go to Sierra Leone.
No, it was not only in Liberia they were distributed. They brought to also, some of them came to Freetown, Sierra Leone, because that is where the port was, and then they were then routed to other parts of Africa. They went around and then they get distributed to other places, yes.
Now, of course, when the Europeans drew the boundaries of Africa in the 19th century, in the 1800s,
yes.
The boundaries were somewhat arbitrary, as we've seen also in the Middle East. They didn't necessarily draw the boundaries where peoples lie. In other words, you might have one country like Sierra Leone has two separate tribes in it, whereas you might find another tribe, Niger and Nigeria have the same beginning because there's one tribe in two countries.
Yes, and then they distributed. If you check Niger and Nigeria, they speak roughly the same languages, but you have Monde, the Fulanis living in Niger, versus living in Nigeria. Some part of Nigeria also you have the Fulanis living there. So Nigeria is a vast country, it's a vast continent that has a multitude of different people living
but
in this.
My point is if you compare Africa with, say, Europe, you find in Europe that most French-speaking people live in France or Belgium and Switzerland border France. The Italians live in Italy, the Germans live in Germany, and the borders are roughly along the lines of ethnic differences, you know, Spanish, and there are a few boundaries you could argue in Europe, but generally that's the case. Whereas in Africa, you find, for example, in Sierra Leone, you have two completely different tribes, and you have tribes across the boundaries don't relate to the tribes. Is that fair to say?
Yes, because what happened is the boundaries really, as you said, they are not really based on ethnic distribution like in Europe. Well, obviously, if I am the European that is going to make the laws on how I can distribute other lands, I would not leave a problem in my continent.
Exactly.
I would make sure that my continent is fairly distributed. But the European, when they came to Africa and do the distribution there, they distributed it based on their own interests, on what they can get.
Exactly.
So that is what happened.
And also, frankly, the Europeans fought many, many wars amongst themselves, and so that's kind of how the boundaries were drawn. There are very few straight lines in Europe.
Yep.
There are actually a number of straight lines in Africa and even more perhaps in the Middle East. I guess my question to you is, given the colonial history of Africa and given the fact that you have many tribes in some countries and the same tribe over many national boundaries, has that caused problems for the African peoples?
Well, I wouldn't say it caused problem for the African people. What the benefit that we got as a result of that kind of distribution is that when a man like me leaves Sierra Leone, I can go to Guinea-Conakry and speak Mandingo, and everybody will understand what I speak, so I'm not a foreign.
What's the language?
Mandingo.
Maringo, and that's the language of?
It's a Sierra Leonean language also. You can speak it in Sierra Leone, you can speak it in Guinea-Conakry, and you can speak it in Bamako, Mali, and then you can also speak it in the Gambia. So it's a language that is spoken across the West African states. So you can go to all this part of the countries and speak this language.
Because that's all one tribe?
One tribes, you know, so you can find yourself comfortable amongst those people. So it's one of those benefits. But to say that it was part of creating conflict, no, that is not part of it. Most of our conflict are somehow related to some, I can say, external forces coming in and then trying to interfere and then support a group against another group, like you divide and rule. So most of our conflict are originated from this kind of situation.
Dividing among, but usually it was tribal divisions that were exploited.
Yes.
Famously in Rwanda, of course, the Hutus
versus the Tutsis, when the entire world was stood by and then see the Tutsis and been massacred and destroyed. Over a period of 100 days, you have like 800,000 people were killed in Rwanda. So that's a very sad situation, and I hope it does not repeat itself.
Well, and that's, I think, a lot of people's concern in Darfur. We're going to get to talking about the genocide in Darfur. The question for a Westerner, for an American, for a European, is when is it appropriate to intervene, and when is it not appropriate to intervene? You and many others criticize the West, criticize the United States for not intervening in Rwanda. I share in your criticism. I think we should have gone in and done whatever we could to save those lives. And yet there are others that say that we should not intervene in Darfur. We should let the Sudanese government stay in control and let African solution. I guess we're going to take a break soon. But when we come back from the break, I'd like to understand, when do you think Africa can take care of itself, and when does it need Western help? What kind of Western help should be available to Africa? And when should the West say, as to some extent President Obama said in Iran, you know, we're not going to meddle in internal affairs? When is it proper? When is it not? I want to get to that. I also want to get to your questions. If you want to call in and ask a question of our guests, please feel free to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let me know what you think. You can also comment on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. When Mohamed Moussa and I come back, we want to talk about Darfur, Rwanda, and really the whole history of Africa. He has a very interesting connection. He's someone who, though he's from Sierra Leone, studied in Kuwait, studied Islamic studies, was given that opportunity by the Kuwaiti government. And it's interesting because, of course, the whole northern half, well, not half, the northern part of Africa, north of the Sahara, is really more Arab country, and the connections of what conflicts between Arabs and Africans exist, I also want to discuss. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Every year, 350,000 people are diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Who will be their caregivers?
I am a caregiver.
Yo soy la que cuido a mi abuelo.
I'm a caregiver.
Call 1-800-437-2423 for a free brochure from Alzheimer's Disease Research on caring for those you care for the most. 1-800-437-2423.
I'm a caregiver. Mom, you're gonna look good.
Albert couldn't take long walks. He was diagnosed with a bad heart. After considering all the treatment options, his heart specialist recommended a pacemaker instead of putting him to sleep. Get the facts about animal research.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Host Mark Levine, we're talking about Africa, and specifically, when is it appropriate to intervene? What should the West do? When should the West be involved in African affairs? And what is going on there? My guest is Mohamed Moussa. He is from Sierra Leone. Mohamed, you grew up in Sierra Leone, and then you went to Kuwait.
Yes.
To study.
Yes, I studied Islamic studies in an Islamic institution, Islamic Institute in Kuwait. Yes.
And how did that happen?
We had the Kuwaiti government will send scholarship in Sierra Leone, and amongst the people that will take the exams and get the scholarship, I was the, number two in the country, so I was selected to go there and study Islam. So I studied Islam in Kuwait in Islamic
now
Institute.
Yeah. Why Islam rather than, say, computer studies or accounting? Was that your primary interest?
Well, when at that that time of your age, you went back to this part of the world and you are given the option to study Islam, that you can go back and teach people on Islam. Because basically what you learn in the Quran is that the best knowledge is when you study Islam and teach other people. That is the best knowledge that you can have to teach others.
Did Kuwait offer to allow you to study computer science or accounting, or they wanted to focus on
that? Really, at that point, it's all mostly when you sign the document going over there, you are given the opportunity to study Islam. So going there and making a change is like a breach of the contract.
They don't want you to study.
I don't want to go that path. I will say that it's clear that when you sign a contract to study something, when you go there and then start to making changes, it's like you're not.
I hear you.
Yes.
I understand. Like so, and you were there actually from 1989 to 1995. You were telling me you were there when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait.
Yes, it was an interval that morning when the invasion happened, and after the invasion, we were evacuated from the country, went back to Africa, and then in 1992 we were admitted again to Kuwait, and then completed our studies.
Now, one of the things, if you look at African geography, we could show the map back up here. If you know African geography at all, you know that this entire northern part of Africa is the largest desert in the world, the Sahara Desert. It's extremely vast. As I showed from my other map, the United States of America could fit pretty much in the continental United States, in the entire Sahara Desert. And what that does is it separates. In fact, you can almost see the straight boundaries here, right here in the middle of the Sahara Desert. These northern countries, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, and Egypt, which are African countries, which excuse me, are Arab countries, and then south of the Sahara, sub-Saharan Africa, are more what we may call black African countries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one exception, and that's Sudan, and I think the reason for the exception is the Nile River runs right through here.
Yeah.
And the river, of course, provides water and fertility in the middle of the desert, and so Sudan would be the great crossroads between the Arabs in the north and the black Africans in the south. Sudan is also the largest country in Africa, as you can see from this map.
Yep.
And it is largely in Sudan that people are concerned. They're concerned about this province of Sudan right here, called Darfur, where you have, it is actually both sides are Muslim, but you have Arab Muslims largely under the control of the government who are have been accused of killing hundreds of thousands of black African civilians in this area, men, women, and children. Prior to the break, you talked about the situation in Rwanda and, and the horror there. Would it have been appropriate for the West to intervene in Rwanda, and would it be appropriate now for the West to intervene in Sudan?
It is always appropriate for the West to intervene in any conflict in the world. Because when you talk about conflict in the world, that's why we are all signatory to the accord in the United Nations. We signed to the United Nations so that when we have conflict in the world, we will have leadership to control the situation and intervene and resolve the conflict. But when you have conflict in the dimensions of what is happening in Darfur, what you need to do is to engage the African institutions like the OAU. You engage the OAU that is underground there. They know their people. They know what happened
there. You
have
to explain to people what the OAU is. A lot of the listeners don't.
Organization of African Unity.
And what is that?
That is the organization of African countries that come together after independence during the 60s. In 1963, all the African countries come together and they decided to form an organization, an umbrella organization that will take care and resolve all conflict in Africa.
And perhaps we should have mentioned, and I apologize,
yes,
we didn't. And that's my fault, that whereas most of African countries were colonized by Europeans in the 1800s, following World War II in the 1960s is when most of Africa became independent.
That's correct.
Virtually every African country, not every single one, but 90% of them between 1960 and 1965, it seems, was the time of great independence. And then they formed the Organization
of African
Unity, now called the African Union.
Yeah.
But the African Union has been criticized, for example, in Rwanda, for not intervening, for not stopping that killing.
Well, because in the African, in the 1963, when the African, the Organization of African Unity was, they have an article, Article 2 and Article 3 of their charters told them that they should not intervene in the internal affairs of a sovereign country. So if they have a sovereign country that is going through any process, they should not interfere militarily to resolve that problem.
Even when you have Hutus massacring Tutsis in massive numbers?
At that point, they did nothing to alter it. But recently, there was a latest development that in the African countries sat and then learn from the mistake that happened during that genocide that took place in Rwanda. So they decided to add another article that is Article 4 to that, which says that in case there is any sense that the African countries think that a nation is committing genocide and war crime against its people, they have the right to come in and intervene. They tried it in Sudan. Lately, in 2004, the African countries formed an organization, a group of African troops, to go there on an African mission. But they were not supported. They didn't give in, they were not given all the logistics that they needed by the West so that they can execute and then do the work underground. Because if you recall what happened in Somalia when the Americans came over there, it was a very, very sad situation.
Yeah, they came for a brief period of time. Yes. And then a few American troops were paraded through the streets of Mogadishu, and America said, we're out of here.
That's it. And
we're
done. Things fall apart, and what happened? The Americans, they just decided to bail out and leave everything there. And since then,
You have disarray going over that part of the world. You have the conflict in Somalia will never end because these people are fighting. They don't know why they are fighting. They don't have no end in sight. They have nobody to tell them why you're fighting, and they have nobody to put them together. So that is the situation we want to avoid.
Most recently, we had the case of the pirates from Somalia attacking Western shipping out of really an anarchy. There's no government in Somalia.
Obviously, if you have a lawless country like that, a big vast of country like that, a land like that, you have all these guys, disgruntled guys sitting in that part of the world. They don't have nothing to do. They don't have no job to do. And these kids that left Somalia and went to places like Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and some part of West and South Africa, they have gone back to their countries. They left the diaspora and came back to their country. They don't have nothing to do. They know how to speak English. Those are the people that form this banditry and then going stealing on the sea. So
let me ask you this, Mohammed.
You have to expect.
When you say that the OAU, the Organization of African Unity, African Union, needed Western logistics for their troops in Darfur, are you saying that they wanted American troops on the ground, or what? When you say logistics, did they want people? Did they want money? Did they want arms? What did they need?
Okay, let's mirror the same situation. When this the situation break out in Kosovo, in Yugoslavia, what did we do? The international world sent troops all over the world to go there and rescue the situation over there.
To be fair, there was first genocide in Bosnia, and we did nothing.
Yes.
People were massacred. Oh. The United Nations says, here's a safe haven in Srebrenica, and we did nothing, and they were all murdered. And then, when it happened in Kosovo, finally we did something.
Yes, and then we sent a troop from Europe. NATO provided troop and logistic and went there and stopped the trouble over there.
Do you think America troops are needed in Darfur?
Well, I wouldn't say directly the American troops are needed in Darfur, but America has a lot of muscles and power that America can use to support the African troops on the ground.
What can we do?
What can America do? America has the logistics. America have planes that they can use to train our troops in Africa and then give them the logistics, the manpower, the technical support, the housing, food, money, and every other support that is logistically needed to support our troops, the African troops on the ground, to execute and then try to resolve the conflict on the ground. If we do that, we will see peace coming in.
Well, now recently, the head of Sudan, who is a dictator, who, as we've talked about, has been indicted by the International Criminal Court, refused to allow African Union troops. They tried to go in, and he said no.
Okay. First of all, the word dictatorship is a very, very broad definition to say that on any African leader's right at this moment, because if he wasn't elected, there are lots of leadership that are not elected in
true,
the world.
Kings,
okay?
I've never hesitated to call Chinese dictatorships or anywhere else.
Yes. So those guys, like, I will give you an example of why I think the West does play a double standard when it comes to calling people dictators. When you check with Robert Mugabe, was there during the 80s, was a very nice guy to the British people.
He's a terrible dictator. I don't deny that at all.
Until the 1994, the Queen Elizabeth of England awarded that man with a knighthood, okay?
Yes.
And then after that,
we've supported many dictators.
Okay.
We do today.
Okay.
Today we support Saudi Arabia and Egypt, who are two horrible dictators.
Look,
we supported the Shah of Iran.
Okay.
When I say dictator, I don't in any way mean to suggest anti-American. Some of the worst dictators have been people we've supported.
Yes.
We have to take another break. If you want to call in and join in this discussion, I hope you do. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Saving for retirement might be easy for some folk, but for others, it might take a little more work. And for those who haven't started, there are still things you can do to catch up.
Oh, that is good news.
Like getting out from underneath past debt. And don't get wrapped up with high-interest credit cards.
Get you some eyes.
Be diversified with your investments. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Your financial goals are not out of reach. The choice is clear. For a happy ending, choose to save.
Everyone with alcohol and drug addiction is in the same boat. With treatment, you can find solid ground. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dude, are you sure you want this tattoo? Because...
just do it!
Some mistakes in life are permanent. Like hearing loss. To learn how to protect your hearing, visit ASHA.org.
You've probably heard about heart disease, but did you know that it's the number one killer of women nationwide? Heart disease claims more lives each year than breast cancer, lung cancer, or strokes combined. But there are steps you can take to protect yourself against it. For more information on how you can prevent heart disease, contact your local American Heart Association or visit their website at www.americanheart.org.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're talking about Africa and African affairs with my guest, who is African. His name is Mohamed Moussa. He is from Sierra Leone. And we're talking about real dictatorships is where we left off.
Yes.
Let me give you my view so you know where I'm coming from, and then feel free to dispute it. I am someone, and I really try to have universal principles on whatever issue I have. And I always believe that democracy is better than dictatorship. I do not deny that America has supported many dictators throughout our history, as has Europe, as has China, as has this, Russia and the Soviet Union, as have the Arab states, who are mostly dictators themselves, as have many, there are many African dictators as well. You know, when the people march in Iran, I'm fully on the side of the people, not on the side of the dictators. It seems to me, though, that people prop up their own dictators, whether it's Europe or America or Russia, because they want to support their own interests. And usually the people who are thought of last are the people of the country. The people of, in this case, Sudan, but it could also be Liberia or any other country. And that, but that's in no way to say that the dictators themselves are good people. Even if, I mean, Sudan may be doing the wishes of the Arab countries, and we may have the Shah of Iran did wishes of the United States of America, but at the same time, they are oppressive people who are mistreating their own people. So I want to be clear, when I condemn the leader of Sudan, he's not the only person I condemn. I condemn many dictators around the globe.
Okay. Well, now let's talk about the leader of Sudan, that is Omar al-Bashir. When you talk about the leader of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, Omar al-Bashir, when he came to power, obviously he was liked by the West. It's only recently when Omar al-Bashir accepted Osama bin Laden, when he was driven from Saudi Arabia and then he took refuge in Sudan, and you saw the Clinton administration bomb Sudan at that time. So he got on the bad book of the West since that time. And the second thing that Omar al-Bashir is doing that is really bothering the West, especially countries like France, is that he's meddling in the internal affairs of Idriss Deby in Chad. So he's trying to destabilize Chad,
which is a French colony,
and the French people are not happy with that. So he
And to be clear, I mean, just to give you an example, currently we support dictatorships in Egypt and Saudi Arabia. We used to support the dictator of Panama, Noriega, and the dictator of Philippines, Marcos, and then they turned against us, and suddenly we dislike them. I try to be consistent and say that all dictators, none of them are worthy of our support. But totally apart from the international issues, what he's doing with America and France, there is a horrific crisis in Darfur. There are people, innocent people, whatever you think of the West, or who are being killed, men, women, and children, whole villages, I've seen the clips, are no longer exist, are wiped off the map because of a policy of removing native peoples from their land.
Okay, that side of it, I don't want to really emphasize the fact that people have been moved from their land. I don't want to say that because when you have a vast country like Sudan, it's a very big
country, massive
land that you have
It's pretty much all of the United States east of the Mississippi.
So when you have a country like that and you have indigenous people trying to fight to overthrow or change the government that is the central government that is holding this country together, a mass country like that, that's a big problem. So Omar al-Bashir is opening his arm to these groups, the two groups that are notorious fighting the central government, the GEM and the SPLA that is led by John Garang, who was dead, okay? So he sat with them in 2003. Omar al-Bashir was seeing that his government was being really defeated somehow. These guys were advancing largely towards the capital. So what he did was to counter that and then went into N'Djamena in 2004 to do a peace treaty with these two groups. So they agreed on a peace treaty and a power sharing. And John Garang with his guy came to the capital. So where is the GEM? Why they didn't come? The Darfurian guys, why they didn't come to the capital? Why has they already signed the document? Why they didn't come to sit down on the peace agreement to implement the peace agreement that they already signed? Instead, they're trying to undermine the credibility of the government and trying to create more problems.
And the GEM, as you know, will accuse the Sudanese government of breaking the agreement and of violating it and not giving the power sharing. My point is not to take sides in the Sudanese civil war. My point is to say that the hundreds of thousands of ordinary people, not the people who are fighting, I understand governments putting down an insurrection. I understand that. What I don't understand is taking hundreds of thousands of people who are not fighting, women and children, and massacring entire villages. That's the part where I think we need international intervention.
It's a really, if you look at it, I mean, if that one can be proven and justified that these guys really did that, that is a crime against humanity. You
and
will
that's
not
what
accept
he's been
that
indicted
that.
For.
That indictment that the United, the ICC did against Omar al-Bashir,
yes.
That one is wrong. From my own perspective, it's wrong. You cannot indict a sitting president on a vast land like that without having any contingency of what is going to happen with that entire country. Well, who is going to lead? If you arrest Omar al-Bashir today and put him in jail, who will be the next president for Sudan?
I would hope it would be someone native to Sudan.
So someone native, planted by the West, yeah? Is that what you're looking at?
Not necessarily.
Okay,
I would hope that it would be someone there who would support a peaceful solution. Here's the thing. Okay. The ICC, mm-hmm. you know, will prove their indictment. If they don't prove it, I mean, that's part of what an indictment does. They did it, of course, against Milosevic
yes.
in Serbia.
It also denied
genocide. Milosevic said he didn't do anything.
It took more than 15 years. We are looking for Milosevic. He was sitting there in Croatia.
You're right.
And then we are looking for the other old man, Radovan Karadzic.
Right.
All these two guys were sitting in that part of the world. Nobody was able to go and arrest them until these guys are ill. They were about to die. And then you go and arrest them. You have nothing to even prove to them that they committed a crime.
Well, no, I think the proof is there. I mean, there was a large war crimes tribunal where they brought evidence again and again. I think the evidence is overwhelming, whether it's against Milosevic or against Omar. But you raise an important point. Even if the evidence is overwhelming that these people have committed war crimes, we have to have a follow-up. The
yes.
question is, I mean, we learned that with Iraq, right?
Yes.
We removed a terrible dictator,
yes.
and there was nothing to take its place.
Mm-hmm.
My question for you is, you originally raised the concept of the OAU,
mm-hmm.
the African Union.
Mm-hmm.
Largely, most of their troops are Nigerian. Mm-hmm. Nigeria is...
It's the biggest contributor. In fact, the Nigerian people, we blessed the Nigerians for coming even into Sierra Leone and then ended that war there because Nigerians provided the large troops. And they were
and
really
Nigeria is,
over there.
Is a fairly functioning democracy by African standards.
Yes.
I think it's far more of a democracy than probably any country except South Africa.
Yes, I will say South Africa and Ghana.
And Ghana.
Yes,
okay,
yes, they're
well.
Very functional.
So here you have Nigeria, which
yes.
is a very large population country,
yes.
hundreds of millions of people,
yes.
almost as large as the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's a functioning democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't Nigeria troops, with American logistics,
mm-hmm.
come in,
mm-hmm.
keep the peace in Sudan,
mm-hmm.
help get rid of the guy committing the war crimes,
mm-hmm.
until the Sudanese people themselves mm-hmm. can rule themselves?
The concept of getting rid of leaderships is nothing that works really. When you get read of leadership. Like, for example, let's talk about what happened in Iraq. You get rid of Saddam Hussein, and then you kill millions of people without any contingency plan of who is going to take over.
Well, I agree we need a contingency plan.
We need a contingency plan.
I agree with you.
Okay, with the Sudanese situation, if we have a contingency plan, and then we bring the OAU to do the work on the ground, with the blessing of the United Nations and the logistical support of the Western countries,
you would support that.
Obviously, that is a clear mandate that will help and resolve the conflict. Conflict in Africa.
We agree
that. That is correct.
Okay, well, that's good.
Provided
okay.
We have the logistic and the support from the West to an
African
method of solving the problem.
I firmly believe that American troops should only be used in two cases.
Mm-hmm.
One, in self-defense. Mm-hmm. We were attacked from Afghanistan. I think we have a right to respond in Afghanistan.
Correct.
And second, where there's genocide going mm-hmm. on. I think we should have acted in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. I think we should act today in Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
But even in Rwanda, mm-hmm. there are those that would argue, if we get involved and there's no contingency plan, we should leave it alone. We mm-hmm. should let the Africans handle it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. The same was argued in Europe. They said, in Bosnia, there's genocide going on. The Europeans will take care of it. It's right in Europe. You don't need Americans. And it turns out in both Bosnia and Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
I strongly argued we needed American intervention. And mm-hmm. people said, let the Europeans take care of it. Let the Africans take care of it. Pol Pot in Cambodia, they said, let the Southeast Asians take care of it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, when genocide's going on, mm-hmm. the local population is not doing anything.
I agree. Well, a typical example of really what happened. One thing I will give a path on what George Bush did for African countries really is two things. One is to, by getting rid of Saddam Hussein, I sent a clear message to a dictator like Gaddafi, and then told Gaddafi, because Gaddafi was the man that really helped destabilize a lot of African countries,
what
especially my
do
country,
specific?
Sierra Leone.
What did he do in Sierra Leone?
Well, in Sierra Leone, what happened is Gaddafi supported people like Charles Taylor, and then they took a lot of
we have to back up, because a lot of people don't know this. Charles Taylor was the dictator
was
of
the
Liberia.
Dictator in Liberia.
And was famous for the child army,
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Tell our listeners what that is, it's a horrific thing that I don't think most people know about.
What happened with Charles Taylor, when Charles Taylor came over there in Liberia, was when he overthrew Samuel in Liberia, he recruited all the child soldiers and then sent people to Burkina Faso. And then all those people that went to Burkina Faso for training, they were supported and armed by countries like Libya. So Libya was doing that.
But Mohammed, let me just, here's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you know more about this
obviously.
Than I do.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that what Charles Taylor did, and to mm-hmm. me this is a particularly brutal thing,
mm-hmm.
he would kill mm-hmm. the parents,
mm-hmm.
and then take the orphan children
mm-hmm.
and induct them into his army.
Yes.
And so they would actually teach them to fight against the very ideals that their parents died for.
Mm-hmm.
9, 10, 11 years old, they don't know what's going on,
mm-hmm.
and they're forced in this almost like a Hitler youth, mm-hmm. in this training mm-hmm. with perhaps the kind of ideological fervor that only small children have, because they don't know enough to know right and wrong.
Yeah.
They're taught, mm-hmm. and they become almost his guardians,
mm-hmm.
and then they kill other people's parents mm-hmm. and bring more children in.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to think of a more horrific crime that's occurred in the last 20 years.
What happened with the war in Liberia, and then its subsequent eruption into Sierra Leone, because the war in Liberia was exported to Freetown, Sierra Leone, really, by Charles Taylor. Charles Taylor is the man that supported the war in Freetown and destabilized our country.
We know that.
The capital of Sierra Leone.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that. And those people learned this war tactics from people like Pol Pot. When Pol Pot was in Cambodia with the Khmer Rouge, going around villages and killing people, taking their children and inducting them into military wars.
You're right.
That is exactly where Charles Taylor learned this.
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
He did copy.
And then he copied
Pot.
From Pol Pot and came back to Africa and implemented this thing through the support of people like Gaddafi and exported this method into West Africa, all over West Africa, into Freetown, Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone, if you go in history, we are the most you know, nice people in West Africa.
You have a democracy.
Yes.
You have a multi-party democracy.
But you know, we tried hard not to intervene in external problems. We resolve our issues. The Sierra Leoneans, we have good reputation outside our country. But in the past 15 years, when this guy exported that war in Sierra Leone, Charles Taylor exported the war in Sierra Leone in 1991, I mean, everything fall apart. That is when you see the killing people, the amputating people, you have children fighting against their. All this destabilization happened in our land.
We have to take one more break, and then we're going to get to our phones. If you want to call in, you can join us at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back.
I helped turn my child's public school into a whole new kind of school. One with a curriculum that really motivates kids. One that has extended hours, 6 days a week, year-round. With loads of academic, cultural, and recreational activities. One that has support services, like medical and dental, right there. A school where parents' involvement is encouraged, where teachers have more time to teach, and students are excited about learning. There's just one problem. My child doesn't ever want to come home. You can help turn your school into a community school for excellence. Find out how. Call 1-877-LOVE-TO-LEARN.
It's coming. Right to your neighborhood. And when it does, you may be surprised. It's your Social Security statement of your benefits, and it's going to help you plan your financial future. Your benefit statement will tell you how much Social Security you're eligible to receive and when you'll get it. Then you'll know how much you need to save for retirement, because that's coming too. The future is in your hands. Choose to save.
The toxic fumes from this meth lab are seeping into Jamie's sinus cavity. Ammonia vapors invade her throat. Toxic gases fill her lungs. Jamie's body is deteriorating. And she doesn't even know it.
Jamie, dinner.
So, who has the drug problem now? Find out how meth affects you at drugfree.org/meth.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're talking about Africa and its problems and its solutions and what should be done in these cases. My guest is Mohamed Moussa. We were talking right before the break about your home country of Sierra Leone.
Yes.
And the fact that some of the really vicious acts of Charles Taylor from neighboring Liberia. And how did that affect Sierra Leone? You had refugees, you had terrorists. What happened?
What happened when it started really was we had people when the war break out in Liberia. We have refugees who are moving from Liberia and crossing the border to Freetown to Sierra Leone on the eastern part of the country through places like Kenema and Bo. So we have all this flood of refugees coming into our country. We left our borders open because we thought that these people needed help because we are there to render them help. Not knowing that a lot of these guys that were coming into the country, they were being recruited by Charles Taylor to come and destabilize our countries.
Really? To destabilize
Sierra Leone. Because
and what was Muammar Gaddafi, the dictator of Libya, what was his role in all this?
Well, the thing is, he was giving a blind eye. He was supporting Charles Taylor indirectly, and then also having most of these guys sent to places like Burkina Faso. During the early time of the war, we captured a lot of people from Burkina Faso that came to Sierra Leone to destabilize the country.
What was the goal? Why did they want to destabilize the country?
The goal was Sierra Leone. We have the northern part of the part of Sierra Leone in Kono. we have diamonds there.
I see.
It's a lot of diamonds. So Charles Taylor wanted to get the diamond. He was thinking that if they come to Sierra Leone and take over that part of the country, well, they will be in charge of all the diamonds there, and then they will be able to export those diamonds without getting it into the
We have a couple government. People who have called in, and I want to give them a chance to speak. Okay. Ibrahim from Woodbridge, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Musa and Mr. Levine. My name is Ibrahim Jalo. I'm from Sierra Leone, too.
Terrific.
It's really, really great for you guys to even mention a short topic about Charles Taylor and his entourage, because what we've been suffering from Sierra Leone is really, really, really terrible. And up till now, we're still feeling the pinch. And in connection to what Mr. Musa was saying about Charles Taylor, I think, yes, Gaddafi really... have a blame to carry on this issue, but again, the United States too has a big blame on it, because if I remember, Charles Taylor was here in prison and he escaped. I don't know how comes he escaped and went to Sierra Leone and caused destruction. Today, I was reading in BBC website stating that the Truth and Reconciliation Committee in Liberia asked the president there, Mrs. Johnson, to step down, and they banned her for attaining government position for 30 years because she's involved too. I mean, somebody like that, I mean, we know during the election, she did not win the election. Judge Opomia won the election, but with the help of the West, they put her in just like what they did in 1996 in Sierra Leone by shoving Jan Kaba in front of us because he did not win the 1996 election.
Ibrahim, hold on a second. I want to give Mohammed a chance to comment on both on do you know why Charles Taylor was released from American prison, and also his second comment about...
I really cannot confirm why Charles Taylor was released in American prison to go there and commit all this atrocity against the people of Liberia and the people of Sierra Leone. I cannot confirm that. It's something that I will definitely try to look into and get some information.
I'll tell you this, Ibrahim. Yes. We will get you an answer, and I'll post it on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. You should at least know the facts. I don't know them, and I don't want to pretend to know them. We will get the facts, and I will post them on the website. What about his second comment?
The second part of your comment about the current president, the first woman president in West Africa, I can say, in Liberia, was now implicated into supporting Charles Taylor during that time of this atrocity, and now she's facing a fierce contention with the people, the opposition there, that she should step down, which is correct. I mean, if anybody that really, really has an attribution to what happened in
anyone
that part
connected
of the world,
Charles Taylor
connected
needs to go.
Charles Taylor really need to go. I support that idea, Mr. Ibrahim, and that is a good research for you, and it's a good idea really to get that kind of information for our listeners.
Ibrahim, you have one last comment, and then I have to go to another caller.
I have last comment just for 1 second. And again, I mean, we Africa, what we need help from the West, because if the West did not help us, we'll end up suffering again, because apart from democracy, we need clean leaders, honest leaders, because these people are looting the country's resources. I mean, they have banks in the West, and the West looking, turning a blind eye on these people. They are criminals, just like these people.
Ibrahim, here's my question. You say you want clean leaders, and that makes sense, and you also want help from the West. How can the West give you clean leaders? The leaders have to come from your own country, Sierra Leone, right? What can the West do?
Yeah, I understand that, but just like the United States, when Barack Obama and John McCain, I mean, we are contesting election, they scrutinized them to make sure these people are not criminals. They did not have any background criminals. But let me tell you for sure, like, the president of Liberia, she's a criminal already. And even the guy in Sudan, I don't trust him, Anes Nkrumah. He's a protege of the APC now. He's walking in the shoes of late Joseph Saidu Mama. He's doing the same thing.
So specifically, here's my question for you, as a Westerner, as an American, what can we do to help? What specifically, if you were giving advice to our president, Barack Obama, what would you advise him to do to help promote democracy in a country like Liberia?
Well, number one, they have to remove Mrs. Johnson. She's not even fit because...
Would you support American troops doing that?
No, we...
No. Oh. I mean, you have to give a power to the ECOWAS, which is the ECOWAS, peacekeeping force. We have... Okay. I mean, the international community have to give strong power with the blessing of the UN for to ECOWAS so that... Okay. Make whatever decision the UN takes.
So you support the ideas that we were talking about, the African Union and troops to come in to help. We do have another call that I do want to get to before our time is up. People seem to always call at the end of a show.
Yeah.
But so thank you very much, Ibrahim from Woodbridge. We have another person with a very similar name, but it's a different person. Ibrahim from Springfield. Ibrahim from Springfield, do we have him yet? He's going to come on in just a second. Are you there? Ibrahim from Springfield. Do we have you? Okay, we'll get him in just a second. I'm sure they'll bring him on as soon as... we have him now, yes. Ibrahim?
Yes.
Oh, good, we have you. What's your comment or question?
Okay, my comment or question... Yes, my name is also Ibrahim. My comment is about Omar Bashir of Sudan. Omar Bashir of Sudan, he is a leader of your country, and by no means that he should be at this time prosecuted by the court that he is going to be, what is that name? ICC.
The ICC.
The ICC.
The International Criminal Court.
Yes.
You support prosecution.
Yes, ICC.
Why do you support prosecution?
That's right.
Tell me why you support prosecution.
He shouldn't be prosecuted.
Oh, he should not be.
He should not be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you support prosecution then?
I don't support it because simply he's the leader of a country. If he's going to be prosecuted, then the country is going to go to limbo. Now that we have a lot of problem in Darfur, and probably the case is not very known at this time with the South Sudan, it's not the right time to prosecute a leader of a country.
Well, here's my question, Ibrahim, and it's the same question, frankly, that I asked Mohammed earlier. And it has to do with how do you stop genocide? I mean, when the genocide was going on in Rwanda, a lot of people complained that the West didn't act. Even Bill Clinton famously apologized for not acting. And yet, if we had tried to prosecute the leaders of Rwanda, then would you have supported that?
Well, at this time, African Union is right there. African Union is right there, and I don't think the genocide word is the right word as far as Sudan, Darfur concern.
Well, you think it's not happening now, but it was happening.
Well, I don't know if it was happening. You know, when we say genocide, it has its own criterion to fulfill, I guess.
Sure. It's when you kill massive numbers of innocent people, not people who are fighting, but people who are just trying to live their lives. I guess my question is this. Bashir will not allow sufficient African Union troops in there. Do you think that the world should support those troops in going in, even against Bashir's will?
Absolutely, no doubt about that. The African Union are in, and I believe as far as the African Union force, they are allowed, and they can do their work. But I have another question as well, which is about Eritrea and Ethiopia and Somalia.
Yeah.
That's a very critical triangle case.
Mm-hmm.
People try to link Eritrean support to the opposition or to the so-called opposition versus the government which is implanted by the African, by Ethiopia and United Nations to the Somali people versus Eritrea say that these people have to have a chance to come to a meeting and elect their own leader.
Ibrahim, I'm sorry to have to cut you off. We only have 1 minute left in the program. One of the problems, Mohammed, we have is that when people call in, they tend to call in at the very end of a program.
Yes.
And we don't have enough time. I would have given you more time had you called in sooner in the program. Let me just give you, in the last minute,
mm-hmm.
a response to his point about Bashir.
Okay, what he was trying to say over there is what I was also trying to tell you. Is all the situations in Africa, we have to resolve the problems as regional conflict. And when I say regional conflict, when it happens, we support regional institutions to take leadership, like what is happening right now. Why do you think President Obama left here and went to Russia and trying to talk to the Russians? Because he's trying to get the Russians on board, so the people in Afghanistan that are fighting the American troops will be worried that, look, if I have all these big people are thinking about the same thing.
We're running up against a tough break.
Okay.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to close it.
All right.
This are obviously issues that we can talk about in the future.
No problem. Thank you,
Mohammed.
Yes, sir. Thank you,
for coming here.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, sir. If you want more information, go to RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine.